From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last year at several markets in the Rochester area where residents who benefit from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, were loading vegetables into their baskets. For many people with limited incomes, fresh produce can often be expensive for their food budgets. That's why professors at the Rochester Institute of Technology teamed up with Foodlink, Wegmans, and the federal government to pilot the Cleaned Cut SNAP program. Here's how it worked. When participants in the program purchased fresh vegetables, they received additional vegetables of equal value at no cost. The goal was to enable people at all socioeconomic levels to have access to the food they need. Program organizers are still analyzing the outcomes of the initiative, but they say the feedback was overwhelmingly positive. Now, we've had conversations on this program in the past about the impact of food deserts on folks who are food insecure, how less expensive and more calorie-rich foods can become mainstays in family diets. And just last week, we had a conversation about the health benefits of whole food plant-based diets. This hour is a conversation about how those issues intersect. Now, we've heard from some listeners who told us they think a vegan lifestyle is not accessible to people of all income levels, that it's just too expensive. Local healthcare workers and local vegans say that is often a misconception, but they also say that more could be done on the policy side and in terms of education to create a more level playing field. They point to programs like Cleaned Cut SNAP as examples. Our guest this hour will take us through what they think about whole food plant-based diets from a number of angles, not the least of which is affordability. So let's welcome our guest now. Welcome back to Dr. Ted Barnett, who's the founder and CEO of Rochester Lifestyle Medicine Group and the founding president and board chair of Rochester Lifestyle Medicine Institute, among many other titles that I'm going to stop reading just for now. Is that okay?
That's fine. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being back here. It's always nice to have you. April Ho is a registered dietitian and a certified professional trainer. It's nice to have you in studio here. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us is Liz Hill-Reuter, assistant professor in the Wegman School of Health and Nutrition in the College of Health Sciences and Technology at RIT. Welcome, Liz.
Thank you for having me.
And Lisa Medina, our colleague from right down the hall, right here at WXXI, radio administrative assistant here, certified group fitness instructor, and a vegan.
Hello, Evan.
Nice to have you in studio here.
Thanks for having me.
How long have you been a vegan?
2 years now.
Just 2 years?
Yes, just
okay.
2 years.
So we'll talk about a lot of different angles here. And listeners, I know we've got a lot of feedback already. It's great. We've got a lot of emails from folks who heard us discussing it this morning when I was on with Beth Adams, kind of getting us ready for the program today. So a lot of different thoughts to share. I'm going to start with Dr. Barnett because, you know, last week, right after you got off the air, we got some emails from folks who said, hey, I think you're missing this. I think this is way too exclusive. I think this kind of shuts out some people who are of lesser economic means. And I know you've heard that before,
sure,
so let's talk
sure.
about your thoughts about that.
Sure. So, I mean, first, let's look at the overall problem, which is that we're having an incredibly sick population. Two-thirds of people are either overweight or obese. We're probably spending 80% of our healthcare dollars on preventable disease. That's basically a foodborne illness. There's no question that everybody should be eating more fruits and vegetables. And I don't care what diet people are advocating, they always will agree with that. We need to be eating more fruits and vegetables, whether it's a vegan diet or, you know, a healthy Mediterranean diet or a paleo diet. Everyone says more fruits and vegetables. So I don't think it's a problem that's unique to a vegan diet. I think that needs to be made really clear. Having said that, it's a problem. People need to be getting fresh fruits and vegetables. And that's why you gather these people around the table.
Well, and so let me read part of that. One of the first emails we got last week was from a woman who said the following, quote, I support veganism 100%, but also understand that this lifestyle requires the time and ability to cook, as well as the money for and access to fresh produce. None of these issues was addressed on the show she's talking about last week, mm-hmm. nor was the claim that Rochester is a hotbed for this movement. What it is, sadly, is a hotbed for poverty. Less elitism, more relevant information, please, end quote. Strong email, strong words there.
Right.
Now, just to kind of get this out of the way, because it's the least relevant part of that email, was whether Rochester is a hotbed for plant-based medicine and lifestyle. And it is. I mean, not just Dr. Barnett, but you've got Tom Campbell here.
Right.
And there's some really big names who have worked in this field, living and working in Rochester. That is certainly true. But the rest of that email, I think, is a fair question here.
Sure.
Number one, time and ability to cook, which is a lot harder. I'm imagining a single mom, and we'll talk to a single mom in just a second about that. But when you are working with people of all different backgrounds, Ted, which of these concerns sort of rise to the top for you? How do you start dealing with that?
Well, whenever you're advocating anything, there's always the, well, you're doing this, but why aren't you doing that? And that's just unavoidable. And it's true. It's a big problem that certain people have more problems with this. But it doesn't mean we can't be advocating what we think is right. And that's why we advocate a whole food plant-based diet, which is a subset of veganism. And, you know, I don't have the answers. If I had the answers, we wouldn't be here, I think. But there's certainly other people around the table who probably do have more to say about that than I do.
Okay, honestly. All right. Well, so let's go around the table here. And then I see the phone already ringing. We'll get to your feedback, of which there will be a lot this hour. Lisa, you've been a vegan for 2 years.
Yes.
Single mom. You know, and I wonder how you would address the email saying, look, this may not even be accessible for people who are single moms, really struggling week to week, month to month. How have you approached it?
It's definitely about planning, right? You should meal prep. That's always an option for, you know, being a single mom, a busy mom. I have multiple jobs, but I do find time to make a pot of rice, steam some veggies, and make maybe some beans for protein. 30 minutes tops, you know, on a long, trying to make a quick dinner. The longest would be about 30 minutes. You can easily make pasta, you know, anything that will fill up the family, right? And you have enough to go around for the day or a couple days in advance. I personally keep staples in my house, whether it's rice, beans, oats, grains, breads, and easily make sandwiches from that. One of my favorites, and it's a household favorite for me, is peanut butter banana sandwiches. You know, all else fails, you got one of those. You get your protein, you get your grain with your bread, and you get a vegetable or a fruit in there, right? So there's all kinds of ways to make those healthy choices and make them accessible for your entire family, whether it's meal prepping and putting it in the fridge for them to warm up in the microwave later, or just making enough at one sitting to last for the next day.
Okay. Why did you decide to go vegan?
For me, it was a personal choice. Mm-hmm. It was a transition. It didn't just happen overnight for mm-hmm. me. I slowly educated myself and also noticed behaviors and patterns in me as to how much I was, how much dairy and meats I was intaking on a regular basis. And the more I educated myself, the more I realized that there wasn't a necessity for me to eat meats and dairy. And if for no other reason, there are supplements or mocks to those foods if I actually had to have them. So it was a personal choice, and it definitely was a transition. I'm not going to say I woke up one day and it was a vegan diet. Right?
No, you sound like you did some work to try to understand what the change was going to entail, what the prep was going to be. But I also wonder if you looked at what you sort of used to be eating more regularly and what you eat now, and if you see changes that... So one of the perceptions is that this is automatically more expensive. Well, let me read a short email and I'll get your take on this.
Okay.
Linda writes and says, I don't see how anyone can equate the cost of a meat-based diet to a plant-based one. I am retired, living entirely on Social Security payments with a mortgage, and I eat very well with a whole food plant-based diet. The cost of meat is so high, and even higher when the health and environmental costs are factored in. If the growers of the crops grown solely to feed animals were not subsidized, the number of people eating meat would have to decline due to the true cost of meat. I'm also careful to buy organic when it is called for, according to the Dirty Dozen list. I would never eat non-organic fruit with the exception of bananas. Beans, not Bambi. That's from Linda in Interlaken, New York. But she's saying just looking at meat itself can be very expensive. And now that she's moved away from meat, she notices an actual savings there.
And that is completely true for me as well. Those $105 that I would spend monthly for my family on meat packages at the local meat market, I can very well spend half of that, get almost a full cart of the grains, the legumes, and the veggies on a monthly basis. I don't shop monthly, you know, that would be generous to say, but I shop every other week or weekly. And of course, it's for the veggies and the fruits to make sure that you have enough and that, you know, you're not buying stuff that's just going to spoil on the counter. But yeah, I definitely noticed a savings. The only time I believe that it would feel like I'm overspending is when I'm buying the processed foods. Because there are vegan processed foods, just like regular foods. And it's the cheeses and the boxed meat and packaged, you know, mock meats and things like that. But on a savings end, if I stuck to my regular daily diet, I'm all set. I save money.
All right. So before I turn to our other guests, let me just ask you one more question here, which is that if you had all the time in the world and maybe a significantly higher income, are there sort of aspects of your diet that you would like to, or are there foods you'd like to eat more regularly? Are there things that feel like, hey, I'm doing well on a vegan lifestyle right now, but this would, if I had more time, more money, this would be something that I'd be eating more regularly?
Nope.
No?
No, because I feel like I make the time. On the weekends, I do my meal prep. Yesterday was Sunday. I took the time and I meal prepped. I buy my fruits and vegetables. Maybe I would say I would spend a little extra money on organic foods, but I spend my time shopping seasonally, you know, and making sure it's going to be affordable if I buy it what's in season.
Yeah.
But other than that, maybe spending more money on organic foods.
And what do your kids think of this?
So I have two still at home. One is on board and one is not. But he's 19. And again, I've only been vegan for 2 years. It's not something that I grew up on either. I raised them on a regular standard American diet. And I'm not going to force it. I do take my time and educate them. And we have conversations all the time about food, over meals, and things like that. So we definitely, it's a topic of discussion in my household.
Okay. So, Liz, how do you feel about those initial complaints we got last week saying that this is too often when we talk about plant-based, it seems elitist, it seems inaccessible?
Well, I think that's a complaint you can hear about healthy eating overall, that people say that eating healthy is more expensive. And, you know, I think there is some truth to that, but there are a lot of fruits and vegetables that are affordable as well. But I think, you know, we can't dismiss this concern that it does take extra time and planning to eat healthy. But I think that that's true whether you're an omnivore or a vegan.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, certainly if you're just going item by item, if you're on much more sort of a tight budget, you're not going to buy too many bell peppers these days. You're going to buy, you know, vegetables that are, you know, you get a lot more per pound. And so I can see why limitations might come in or why the field would narrow. But overall, are we, do you think society is not really reaching out enough? Is this a conversation that is felt a little bit too... There are terms that I don't think mm-hmm. I can use on the radio that the kids use, the slang terms, you know, the upper crust, you know, sort of whatever the case may be. Do you feel like that?
Well, I think one of the listener made the comment that this was elitist.
There's a term that we could use.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think there is an element of healthy eating. It shouldn't be elitist, but it is not. It is certainly more challenging for many of our city residents who do not have adequate transportation or access to grocery stores than it is for many of us. And I think we would be doing everybody in our community a disservice to try to sugarcoat that.
Okay. Well, how do you feel about all of this, April? I'll just kind of keep it broad for you to start here. How do you feel about this conversation, this community debate about this?
Yeah. Well, in the original feedback with the concern, I kind of heard two points, and one was the challenge of having the time to prep, and the other one was the cost of the actual food. And just like people have been saying, the time to prep and meal plan and things like that, that's not unique to veganism. Is it a little bit more challenging? Yes, and absolutely when you're making sure that the diet is nutritionally complete, it does take a little more planning, but overall, it's not unique to veganism. It's anyone trying to eat healthfully. And the issue of the cost of the actual food is actually one that's near and dear to my heart because I used to work for FoodLink, and so I dealt a lot with those issues. And I recently had one of my own patients who all the money that she spends on food comes from her SNAP dollars. And so she came into my office and she told me she had $1.50 to spend on each meal. And of course, I'm concerned for this patient to get a nutritionally complete diet. And so I was like, all right, is this possible? And moreover, I also wanted to know if it was possible at Wegmans, because that is the largest and, you know, kind of most accessible grocery store throughout Rochester. And so I priced out everything in this meal plan from cooking oil to spices at Wegmans to see if it was doable. And one thing that I found was that I actually only could fit meat into the diet on one or two meals out of a 21-meal plan, a 7-day meal plan. Just because the fruits and vegetables and the beans and rice and grains were naturally a lot more inexpensive. And so it was absolutely a challenge. I'm not trying to make light of it or say that it was easy.
I don't think you are. Yeah.
It was very, very challenging. And after I did it, I didn't want to do it again for a long time. But it was possible. And given that it's possible at Wegmans to, you know, eat kind of a whole foods, plant-based diet, when we get into some of these other resources that are available, such as the Rochester Public Market, you know, Foodlink's curbside market and things like that, it's definitely doable and can be an inexpensive way to eat. But those challenges, as Liz brought up, of people having the accessibility, I bring up the curbside market to all my patients that that bring up costs as being an issue. And for anyone that doesn't know, that's actually a truck filled with low-cost fruits and vegetables and sometimes other items like eggs that travels throughout the city. And they go to so many locations. They go to different counties even. And still there are times when patients come into my office and they say that they don't actually go anywhere near where I could get to because I have to walk. So while there are these amazing programs out there, it's still an issue for a lot of people that don't have transportation.
Okay, so that's another accessibility challenge
right there.
And when you talk about sort of the, I'm trying to remember the phrase you used, you're not just trying to build a plan, even if it's on $1.50, but you're also thinking about full nutrition or sort of the, okay. So
exactly.
Do you have concerns about a plant-based diet meeting all of those nutritional needs?
Yeah, I do. For vegetarians, not so much. That adds in, you know, eggs and milk, and it's much easier to get a nutritionally complete diet. And personally, my standard that I used for that project was the USDA Healthy U.S. style eating pattern. So I needed a certain amount of vegetables, fruits, protein, grains, and dairy. When we get into veganism and we eliminate the dairy and the fish that provides omega-3 and a lot of our vitamin D, there are definitely more significant nutrient concerns. And while I found that it's possible to get all of those through food, which when we're talking about cost as an issue is important because supplements are expensive. So if we're trying to get all of those, you know, nutrients through food, there are certain foods that you almost need to include. And I, the two vegans can, you know, tell me if they agree or disagree on this. But I think it would be really hard to get a nutritionally complete diet without things like nutritional yeast, flaxseed, chia seed, walnuts on most days that you're eating, which can get tedious and sometimes it can get boring. So
okay, Dr. Barnett's ready for this.
Excuse me. So let me respond to that, because I think a nutritionally complete diet is not only possible on a vegan diet, I think it's a lot healthier than a typical vegetarian diet, which includes lots of dairy and eggs. So the vitamin D you mentioned is only in a vegetarian diet because it's added to milk, right? So it's a supplement in milk. Milk does not naturally contain vitamin D. As far as omega-3 fatty acids go, we actually don't really know how much omega-3 fatty acids you need in your diet. We tell people to have a tablespoon of ground flaxseed or chia seed every day just to make sure. But it's really a balance between omega-6 fatty acids and omega-3 fatty acids. And omega-6 fatty acids are very high in a processed food diet. So if you're not eating a lot of processed food, you're not getting a lot of omega-6s. Omega-3s are actually, you know, alpha-linolenic acid is the high most common fat on the planet because it's in leaves. So if you're eating a lot of leaves, which our ancestors did, you're getting lots of omega-3 fatty acids. So I don't really think that's a concern. I mean, the one thing that we, you know, is of concern is B12. It takes a long time to become B12 deficient, but if you're totally plant-based and it's a clean diet, meaning clean, there's not dirt on it because there's plenty of B12 in soil and in untreated water, which our ancestors had access to. We don't. We have a very, you know, hygienic, in quotes, diet. So we do need a recommend a B12 supplement, but that's like $1 or $2 a month. I mean, it's really cheap to get B12. But on the other hand, we really recommend you get a B12 supplement because for the rare person who becomes sick from B12 deficiency, that will be a headline in the newspaper. Whereas if a meat eater or somebody of a vegetarian diet dies from a heart attack, that's not a headline because that happens 1,000 times every day. Whereas B12 deficiency in vegans is extremely rare, although it does happen.
Okay, and, so. And Lisa, how do you feel about maybe making sure that you had some of those items that April brought up? Are there must-haves for you as you plan meals as a vegan now?
A good way to look at it, especially when you're beginning, is to incorporate beans, greens, and grains, at least two of the three meals a day. Yes, you can absolutely sprinkle some flax seeds or flax grounds on the food you're eating, or nutritional yeast on a baked potato with some broccoli. You got your starch, you got your carb, you've got your B12, and you also have your protein, because broccoli is high in protein. The greens normally are. And then handful of nuts a day. I look at it as if I don't think that every single day I need every single one of these things to be healthy. So if it's incorporated in my diet 5 of the 7 days or 4 of the 7 days, I should be pretty good. On top of it, I also take supplements, but I take those. They're not a necessity. I take them as a personal preference. I do take a B12 supplement every day, and I take a multi women's vitamin, and it's a vegan pill, a vegan tablet, and I do just fine. I've been to the doctors. I've had blood work. I've been told that I have superb blood work, quote unquote, from my doctor.
Well, you have Trump's doctor? I'm sorry. No.
You have a cold.
I do. I'm loopy today. I am loopy. Can I interrupt? Because yeah, on the point absolutely. Of health here, let me ask you a serious question.
Okay. Now,
because I don't doubt that you have superb blood work. And what I wanted to ask you was, when you changed 2 years ago, because you've been vegan for 2 years now, do you feel any different now than you did before?
I do.
In what ways?
More energy. Me and Dr. Barnett were talking, and I told him that about a 23-pound difference in weight loss. And, you know, just like every other human, you need everything. You need the sleep. You need the nutrients.
Sure.
You need, you know, everything, the exercise, the diet, to feel 100%, right? So I can't say that I wake up every single day and I'm at my 150%.
Yep.
It just varies. It varies on my sleep patterns, you know.
But generally speaking, you feel better.
Great.
More energy.
I do. I feel way better, lighter on my feet. And I just overall feel healthy. I can't tell you when the last time I actually had a cold.
Like me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't think of, you know, I get the occasional headaches, but those vary. But I cannot, for the life of me, tell you when the last time I actually had any kind of cold.
This is why I brought this up, because, Lisa, I think when we are going to talk about veganism, plant-based living for everyone, you know, eschewing the idea of elitism, which we're going to come back to in a second because our listeners have some pointed comments about that. Mm-hmm. But this is a country where a lot of people don't have health insurance. And for a lot of people who do have health insurance, you have high deductibles. So even if you get something, you may not go because you don't feel like you can. If you got a $5,000 or $6,000 deductible, how many people can actually afford that anyway? And so do you think that the move to plant-based is actually a way to maybe save not just on what are you paying for food, daily, weekly, monthly? Are you going to go to the doctor less? Are you going to find yourself in those hard decisions less? I don't know the answer to this. And certainly I know, you know, I'm talking to someone who's a vegan but not a doctor.
Right.
But I'm curious to know what everybody thinks. Is that part of this for you? Do you think I got a chance to save on healthcare costs with this?
Overall, yes.
Okay.
Long term, yes. I do feel that way. Again, back to the blood work. A doctor, a medical doctor, is telling me that my blood work is superb from recent blood work that I might have had the year before. So clogged arteries, you know, better heart health. You're right. I'm not a doctor, but I believe that with this kind of diet, incorporating more grains, fruits, and veggies, you are looking at a healthier long term for yourself.
Yeah, Liz, I think I heard Dr. Barnett call it foodborne illness earlier. When we talk about some of these diseases that often come from years of choices we're making with eating. So in terms of educating the public and educating doctors, educating everyone in society, do we need to do a better job of saying, hey, you know, heart disease or cancer or whatever it is doesn't just always just happen to you later in life, that this is a buildup of choices? Is this part of sort of a societal education for everybody?
I think that's an excellent point. I mean, when you think of something like cancer, that's a disease that develops over decades. You know, when somebody's diagnosed with a cancer, that probably started 20, 30 years before that. But, you know, I keep going back to what Dr. Barnett said, that no matter what your dietary pattern is, we could all benefit from eating more fruits and vegetables. And I think that, you know, for those out there that a vegan diet is just never something they're going to do, can we have this conversation about how can I get my diet to be more plant-based? Because I am concerned that when we talk about vegan diets, you just... It's just not going to work for a lot of people. And so they tune out. And I'd like to bring the discussion just more about being more plant-based and more healthful overall.
Okay. April, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think something that I've seen pretty consistently in the research is that it's far more important, what's far more important is what you are eating rather than what you're not eating. So are you eating whole fruits and vegetables and beans and whole grains? That is very important, and it's going to have a bigger impact on your health than cutting out every single food that people would see as junk food or every single animal product. so, yeah, I think that's a really valid point, that you can get a lot of benefits from a plant-based diet, and it doesn't have to be completely vegan to get a lot of those benefits.
I have a question for Liz. When you did your analysis, did you look at frozen food and frozen vegetables?
For April?
April. I'm looking at April. April, right. Frozen vegetables. Did you compare those with fresh vegetables and whether that was economical?
When I did my analysis for the $1.50 a meal plan.
Right.
Yeah, so I used a lot of frozen vegetables.
And are they a suitable alternative to fresh vegetables, do you think?
Absolutely. Sometimes they're actually more nutritious because they're harvested and preserved in their ripest state, which is when they're most nutrient dense.
Right.
So compared to maybe a strawberry that was picked when it wasn't quite ripe and it's been on a truck bed for 2 weeks coming here from California, a frozen strawberry can be a lot more nutritious. So yeah, canned sometimes come along with extra sodium and they sometimes lose some of their nutrition in the canning process. But there are specific nutrients that actually become more bioavailable when you cook them. So, for example, canned tomatoes, the lycopene in there is more bioavailable than in a fresh tomato. So I think all forms of fruits and vegetables can be very healthful, and I definitely tell my patients to focus on frozen and fresh.
Yeah, April, interesting. Benjamin just emailed us to say, as an individual who literally just became vegan due to cancer and cancer treatment, I have found that frozen fruits and veggies is a great way to aid in minimizing costs. The benefits of this type of eating and living are clear and should be accessible to all, and that does require being a very smart shopper. So he's saying frozen fruits and veggies. So one of the takeaways for anybody listening right now, because I'm sure whether you're thinking about veganism or not, you've probably wondered, is frozen, is it actually as healthy or more healthy? The general rule of thumb, what would you say to people thinking about frozen fruits and vegetables and nutrition?
Yeah, just as healthy as fresh. And I think also if you're talking about frozen as being cost-effective, I think it's also really important to highlight things like the public market, because some of their fresh fruits and vegetables can actually be more effective than the frozen versions that you would find in Wegmans or other stores. So as part of what I was doing is my analysis, I found out that the cheapest apple you can get at Wegmans is 40 cents. And we're talking about $1.50 for an entire meal, whereas you can get an apple for like 5 cents at the public market. So that's a pretty big difference. So definitely taking advantage and making an effort to get to some of these sometimes harder to reach locations can make a huge difference.
All right, some really interesting stuff from our guest this hour. And when I come back, I'm going to come to your phone calls. We've got a lot of phone calls to work through, a lot of emails as well. And as I go to break, I'll just read June in Rochester, who called in to say off air, the idea that veganism is the elite choice is a mistake. Culturally, historically, diets were based in plants and grains. Capitalism and commercialism made meat and dairy a driving force. It's elitist in my mind to eat meat because it's cruel to animals and the environment. That's from June. So maybe a different way to think about it, but we are trying to be realistic about budgets, what's available, and if you want to go whole food plant-based, what that entails with our guests. Let's get that break and your phone call straight ahead. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, Dr. Sayak Valencia is a trans feminist scholar and an activist who will be in Rochester talking to students about the realities of immigration. She'll share with us what she learned on a recent trip to the southern border. Then in our second hour, the team behind the TV show Family Guy recently announced that the show will be phasing out jokes about gay people. Our panel talks about how joke philosophy changes over time. Talk with you Tuesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. This is Susan in Fairport First on the phone. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi, Evan. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
I just wanted to make a comment. I have done this vegan diet through Dr. Campbell's program. It's been about a year, and I just wanted to say some quick benefits. I know there's so much information out there about how to prepare and batch cook, and that's kind of what I do. But for me, I've been vegan on this diet for about a year, and I have lost about 60 pounds. That's not just from the diet, that's exercising. I have type 2 diabetes, and my numbers within a year, I don't know if a lot of people out there have this issue, but I went from 7.7 to 5.8 for my A1C number. I've cut my cholesterol in half, and I feel so much better, and I feel like this is something everyone can do, or at least incorporate some of it into their life. It's just my husband and I at home, so we eat vegan. He's kind of vegan-esque. He doesn't quite go all the way vegan, but he is also having a benefit from it, and I really encourage people to give it a try, at least incorporate some things. There's so many books you can take out in the library, cookbooks to help you with batch cooking. It has been wonderful for me. I have a long way to go in my weight loss, but so far so good.
Susan, thank you. And I know no surprise to people like Lisa Medina here, but in terms of batch cooking and preparation, what's one piece of advice you'd give someone who's really thinking about this, but thinks, I don't know about the budget, I don't know if it's going to be tight. What's one piece of advice for people getting started?
Small steps, and maybe go meatless Mondays, one day a week, dairy-free Fridays. Just take small steps and incorporate it
That's how you built it in yourself?
That's how you built it in. Personally, when I went vegan, I was vegan, but there was a transition from pescatarian to vegetarian to veganism. But for someone who's trying, like her husband is vegan-esque, he's probably doing things like meatless Mondays or dairy-free Fridays.
Okay. Let me get back to your phone calls, and this is Joan and Henrietta. Go ahead, Joan.
Hi. I have a neighbor who's 95 years old, and she's selling her townhouse and moving away close to her daughter. And I said, oh, so we're going to have to get all these new doctors. And she said, the only doctor I have is my dentist. I said, what? Well, she's Seventh-day Adventist, and they're vegans. She has been vegan her whole life. And she has, the only disease she has is dental decay once in a while. And also she has a hearing aid. And I thought, oh my gosh, I think I'm 83, and I think I have about six doctors. And I have arthritis and asthma, so I thought, oh my gosh. So I'm thinking of cutting back, but somehow I don't know I'm ready to give up a good steak every once in a while. So... she's a walking, you know, so maybe we should get in touch with more Seventh-day Adventists.
Joan, thank you. Look at all the different directions our program takes us here. So that's just one little sort of piece of anecdotal evidence or an idea there. But I do want to address Todd on Twitter, who said, Evan, you always talk about evidence on your show. You didn't challenge the person on your show who said she doesn't get sick anymore, doesn't get colds anymore. That was Lisa. That's one case. I did say, you know, Lisa's not a doctor. I don't know. And when you Google this, you find a lot of anecdotal stuff about vegans getting colds and sick less often. I do not know if there's scientific backing for that idea. I do know there is a lot more research and scientific backing for plant-based lifestyle and living, whole food plant-based, halting and reversing some disease, as we've talked about. Common cold, I don't know. Dr. Barnett, what do you know?
It's all anecdotal. I've heard people say the same thing, but
okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, science. I don't have the research right in front of me. So sure. To be fair, a lot of anecdotal stuff. So, and you wouldn't be surprised if it's true, but I haven't seen the research. So
I'm just, it's my proof, right?
There's one person.
Right.
I will say that for kids and earaches, it's huge, and asthma. So between our three kids, there was one earache out of the three in their entire lives. So and it may be the dairy, it may be the wheat, it's not really clear what it is, But that's huge. And think of all these kids who are getting meringotomies. They're getting little tubes put in their ears. They don't have to get those. So,
all right, back to your phone calls. And this is Andrea in Rochester. Andrea, who you might know from Red Fern. Hi, Andrea. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, Evan. Hey, Ted. How's it going there?
All right. Hi, Andrea.
I've been really enjoying this, and I've been firing away on my notes of a couple of things I want to just add to the conversation. So a note about Rochester being a vegan hotbed. I absolutely agree with this. We have a Facebook group, Rochester Vegan, and it has over 1,800 members now. And then we have well over 50 restaurants in the greater Rochester area with vegan options. Every February when the Red Fern closes for a week, we've compiled a list of restaurants and takeout places that you can get vegan options while we're closed. And the list is now over 50. So that's evidence that we have a big population of people in town that want to eat vegan. So that was one point I wanted to make. The other thing about the cost-effective options, I mean, we've said it here this entire hour. There's fruits and vegetables from the public market. They're all, a lot of them are locally grown. Some are organic. Pasta, tomato sauce, beans, rice, lentils, quinoa, tofu, the bulk sections at all of your grocery stores and co-ops, sandwiches, you know, all these things are super affordable. I just think that we need to make the point and call out the elephant in the room, no pun intended, but let's face it, this is just another excuse. Saying it's too expensive, that's an excuse. Just stop making excuses. Go vegan.
But do you think that there's some shaming in that there, Andrea? Are you worried that that is, you know, that for people who are listening who are really, you know, struggling with the budget, you know, do you feel like it's an excuse for them? It's just an excuse.
Well, we had the person, and I'm sorry I missed her name, on the show there with you now, the person who did it for $1.50 a meal or a day? I'm sorry I missed that.
Per meal. $1.50 per meal.
$1.50 a meal, yeah. I mean, she did the work for you. She showed you it's doable. So, I mean, I think we all can see that. Is that too expensive, $1.50 a meal? I feel like that's got to be affordable for almost anyone on the planet.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's affordable for everyone on the planet, unfortunately.
But in Rochester, probably.
And maybe in Rochester. I don't know. I mean, and in a moment, I want to kind of learn more about what we learned through Clean Cut Snap. We're going to go back to that in just a second. But, Andrea, before I let you go, one of our listeners actually wanted to ask about trying to eat on a budget and actually dine out, which is obviously very difficult to do. But so Rob is asking, I'm vegan.
But
this person's saying, I'd love to go to places like Red Fern more often, but it's too expensive. Is there something that restaurants like Red Fern can do to become more accessible?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, cost is definitely relative to people, but I could say that if they think that the Red Fern's too expensive, they could also try Balsam, John's Tex-Mex, Dogtown. Wegmans has some great options with their salad stations and prepared foods. So, and then, I mean, here you can get a bowl of soup that's filling. It's $5.25 for a bowl of soup. A grilled cheese is $7. There are options, you know, so I think that people sometimes think that, you know, some of our entrees, yeah, they run $14, but there are other options on our menu that are cost effective for some people.
Andrea, always good to hear from you. Thanks for calling the program today.
Thank you so much. Okay, enjoy.
Andrea from Red Fern, and when she mentioned some of those other options, I saw Lisa and some others sort of light up. I mean, this is, are you feeling like, you know, on an occasion where you want to maybe go out as a vegan?
And that
and still not spend a lot of money? Can you do it?
Yeah, and that's definitely something I struggle with, being a single mom and having children in the household and wanting to take everyone out to eat. You definitely look for places where you can, you know, save a buck. And Dogtown, it was one of the ones that's a red flag because they're very reasonably priced. And Red Fern is fair as well.
Okay. Did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think something that's just coming to mind here is that when I think about someone who's on a SNAP budget, right, and to be fair, SNAP, called the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, it's meant to be supplemental. It's not meant to completely make up your food budget, and unfortunately it does for a lot of people. But for those people, $7 is too much to spend on a grilled cheese. And so, and I don't even think you could spend your SNAP dollars on a grilled cheese at a restaurant, even if you wanted to. So some of these things that, like, people with money take for granted, we can go out and spend $7. Like, that's no big deal. But to a lot of people, that's out of reach. Or just going to Wegmans and buying a star fruit. That's out of reach. Mm-hmm. And so it's absolutely possible to use frozen vegetables, go to the public market. But if you're doing that every single day of your life, it can feel limiting, and it can feel like there's this entire population of people who still has access to these luxuries that are that just seem out of reach for you.
Okay. Can I jump in on
sure,
that one?
Sure, yeah.
And to talk about things that are affordable or the star fruit part, there's also grocery stores like Price Right and Aldi's that people don't think about. Aldi's is very big on keeping seasonal fruits and vegetables on hand, so they're going to be at a lower cost. They do have an organic section. It's still cheaper from Aldi's than it is at any other grocery store. I've actually seen star fruit, and that's where the light bulb went off, at Price Right. And they were two for a dollar at one point. So yes, do you have to travel and plan to get some of these luxury, so to speak, foods? Yeah, but they are attainable. You can find them at discounted grocery stores if you, and I might be wrong calling them discounted grocery stores, but they're more reasonably priced than per se Wegmans and Trader Joe's.
Okay, I've got just about the full phone board lit up, so we're going to get back to your calls in just a second. Liz, tell me a little bit more, sort of kind of clean up the point that we opened with about Clean Cut SNAP and that program, what we learned from that.
Sure. So participants told me that before they were in the, it was a research study,
yeah,
that they were buying a lot of highly processed foods and not a lot of fruits and vegetables. But by having this incentive program where basically if they spent their own money to buy fruits and vegetables, it was matched to that dollar amount to take more free, that really expanded what they were getting. People said they started buying fruits and vegetables they had never tried before. And also participants said that having access to the cleaned cut line of products at Wegmans, and Wegmans also wholesale them to Foodlink's curbside market, that they were getting more convenient fresh produce, which was what was my whole impetus behind this product. As I read that shoppers in New York City bodegas, what they wanted to see was fresh salads. And that's the same thing people in higher incomes want. So it told me that shoppers, regardless of their social economic status, want convenient, fresh food. And we just need to make sure it's available to people at lower income levels.
Okay. So let me get back to your phone calls. We've got a lot to try to get through in the next 10 minutes or so. Carrie in Rochester next. Go ahead, Carrie.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I just wanted to add a little voice to the conversation here. I've been listening to what everybody was talking about. And I run a business in Rochester called Whole Abundance, where we strive to help people and support them as they do transition to this whole food, plant-based lifestyle. And I wanted to speak really quickly to the economics of it a bit. If we draw a distinction between strictly veganism and this whole food, plant-based lifestyle, I think actually that whole food, plant-based is more affordable than most people think. Because when you're taking out the processed food and you're talking about whole grains, whole foods, talking about what people might call peasant food, so rice and beans, and yes, fresh vegetables, but frozen vegetables, which are often more nutrient dense than fresh because they're frozen, right, at the peak of freshness. So these things are actually affordable to such a broader audience, making it not as cost prohibitive, I think, as something like strictly veganism, where people do kind of feel that elitist paradigm where Redfern might seem out of reach for certain people on a certain budget.
Okay. And Carrie, what have you sort of experienced in terms of helping support people on making these changes? What is the biggest challenge you generally find with them? Or have there been any stumbling blocks?
Well, the first two questions are, first, where am I going to get my protein? So one of the biggest challenges is sort of overriding this fixed paradigm that people operate under in this country that protein only comes from animal sources.
Yeah.
And we know that all protein really comes from plants, right? So that's number one. And the second question is also, how am I going to do this on a budget? How am I going to go whole food, plant-based, or eat healthy on a budget when people that are coming to us feel like they can go and grab a burger for 99 cents, exactly the conversation that you're just having, where fresh produce is going to be that much more expensive. And so we really, really do have to work around that. And once people get into the habit and get into the groove of this is the way I'm thinking about really, truly nourishing my body and feeding it with abundance and what we need and what our body is asking for, it becomes much more easily done. And people see great, great success.
All right, Carrie, before I let you go, tell me what the name of your program is again and where people might find you.
It's Whole Abundance. You can find us on Facebook, Whole Abundance Rochester, and our website is wholeabundance.com. We would love to hear from you.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling, Carrie. All right, so Carrie's point is one of the first questions, where am I going to get my protein? Real quick here. Ted,
sure.
Where are you going to get the protein?
So what I tell people is if you're eating whole foods and you're not adding foods that are basically empty calories like soda, you know, which is basically sugar, or oils, there's hardly any food that's less than 10% calories from protein. And you only need 7 or 8% of your calories to come from protein. So if you're getting enough calories, you don't have to actually keep track of it. Broccoli is over 40% calories from protein. Now, you're not going to get a lot of calories from broccoli, but beans are over 20% calories from protein. There's really nothing. I mean, even a white potato is 10% calories from protein. So there's really nothing except for a few berries and fruits, which are really good food anyway, that are going to be under that. And so eating a whole food plant-based diet, you don't have to think about protein. The elephant doesn't think about it. The gorilla doesn't think about it.
Where do you get protein? Same?
Same. I incorporate tempeh and tofu. Tempeh is just a form of soybean. It's a fermented style soybean and beans spinach and greens.
So if I could just respond to that, people always say, well, beans and tempeh, those are really just concentrated calorie sources that happen to have protein,
some
right?
Protein
just, so it's just like grains. It's a concentrated calorie source. We can't live on greens because we're not horses. But yeah,
right.
Basically.
But it keeps you fuller longer too.
Exactly.
And that's a
right.
bonus.
That's a bonus.
What did the meat industry do about like a big PR campaign telling us that protein only comes from meat for years? Did I miss that? Is that what happened here? Because
yeah.
you grow up and
it
it's
happened.
True. Yeah. I think my father told me you need protein. You got to eat something that used to walk around. I think that's what my father told me growing up. Sorry, Dad. Diane says, I take my hat off for your panel having folks who are telling us that eating healthy can be done on a lower budget. I think the problem with people making poor choices, not particularly because they can't afford good choices, it's if you give people who are making poor choices more money for more food, that doesn't necessarily make them make better choices. They could get sicker. So Diane is raising the point that, you know, education and outreach and trying to demonstrate. Well, on that note, Bev wants to know, can your panel explain how to clean and soak overnight dried beans and cook on stovetops, even wood burners? Anybody? Lisa,
it sounds like she kind of already said it.
So soak your beans overnight with an eighth of a teaspoon per quart of sodium bicarbonate, so that you can, for people who have gas, and then just cook them the next day. It's
okay.
Just soak them. Yeah, you can look it up.
All right, and I'm not even going to be able to get through all of the calls, listeners. Wow, there's so much that people want to say about this.
And if I could make one more point,
sure.
We just put a page on our website. So if you go to rocklifemed.com and look under resources, the second we have a easy recipe page that's got recipes, a single recipe from 12 different websites. To show you how easy it is to get these things off the internet. So
what's the website?
It's rochesterlifestylemedicine.com.
Okay, and from Abundance in the South Wedge, here is Melinda writing us just saying that at Abundance, while local, organic, and fair trade food options can be more expensive, we try to offer regular discounts to make them more accessible, including weekly specials on organic produce. Many people also find the bulk section to be a great resource that is economical with more than 150 different items, and they've got a program called Flour, fresh, local, and organic within everyone's reach, that offers a 10% discount to those receiving assistance from SNAP, TANF, WIC, Medicaid, or the free school lunch program. That's at Abundance in the South Wedge.
I actually wanted to go back to something when we were talking about trying to get enough protein. And I think what you said is true. As long as you're getting enough calories, you will likely be getting enough protein. But I've actually had people come into my office because you get so full on a vegan diet because there's so much fiber and so much volume. It's actually very easy to not get enough calories and still feel full.
Sure.
So I've had people come in with metabolism slowdown, where slowly over time they've eaten fewer and fewer calories. So I do think that's a real concern. But if you are making sure that you're getting enough calories, you will likely be getting enough protein. Mm. But it's something you kind of need to do intentionally because it's easy to not do on
which
a vegan
diet. Which is an advantage for people trying to lose weight. They feel full and they're not taking in so many calories, right? And most of the population has that issue. So I would argue in favor for that reason.
All right, in our last minute panel, just some of the conclusions. I hope our listeners take from this that if it has felt elitist in the past, that may be the host's fault, but these conversations should impact everybody. And there's education that has to happen no matter what your economic means are. But it sounds like Lisa Medina is telling us you can do this if you want to do this.
Absolutely.
April, a quick takeaway from you. What would you leave the audience with as we think about, you know, eating it all across all budgets here?
Yeah, I would also say that you can do it. And it might be challenging and it might mean not doing it all the time. No one's perfect. And a big part of what I do is helping people be okay with not being able to fully do everything perfectly, and that's okay.
Meet them where they are.
Exactly.
Okay, Dr. Barnett, 20 seconds, final thoughts here.
Well, you can do it. I mean, the changes happen amazingly quickly. We have a 15-day jump start where people's cholesterol drops dramatically in 15 days on a very low-fat, whole-food, plant-based diet. Take a look at our website for that as well.
All right, and Liz, final thoughts. Go ahead.
I would encourage everybody out there to check out FoodLink's Curbside Market. It is open to the public, regardless of your income level, and it's a great way to get affordable produce.
I want to thank all of our guests for their insight this hour. Thank you very much for taking the time to be here, answering the questions. I tell Dr. Barnett every time we talk about this, the phone rings all day, so I guess we'll have to do it again soon. Thanks to all of you. Our thanks to Rob Braden, engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great afternoon. Talk to you Tuesday.